Fred Allen in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you, Jimmy, for that flattering introduction. You know, it certainly is a novelty to have an announcer speak well of the comedian. So many programs come on the air, and by the time the announcer finishes describing the comedian, it sounds as though the guy is wanted for hopscotch in Walla Walla or something.
Say, Mr. Allen.
Yes, Kenny. What is it?
I've been having a wonderful time all week.
Who asked you? I mean, what was that?
See, that's right. I skipped two lines.
You skipped two lines? Well, you're not nervous tonight, are you, Kenny?
No, but... Well, you know how it is. I got so many laughs last week, these straight lines don't mean anything to me anymore.
Well, we've got to have some straight lines in the script, you know.
Shall I schmaltz them up and get some laughs?
No, don't schmaltz them up. tell me what have you been doing all week, Kenny?
I've been having a wonderful time. This is where that comes in, I guess.
Yes, well, I think it fitted better the first time, the way you had it. But now, look, Kenny, I'm pretty busy. I've got to get along with my newsreel.
Am I in the newsreels, Mr. Allen?
No, you're not, Kenny, but later on in the sketch, you have a fat dramatic part.
Have I? Oh, boy, wait till Dennis Day hears me tonight.
Yes, sir, you won't be pure island banal, I'll tell you that. And while Kenny brings his enthusiasm to a boil, we turn to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents Your World on Parade. New York City, New York. Recent advertising campaign enlightens public on beneficial proteins and minerals to be obtained through eating meat. As a tribute to the packing industry, Mr. Edgar Guest has written a poem called Meat on the Table. Texaco News, sensing new commercial field for American poets, interviews several little-known bards to get their reactions to new markets for their poetic wares. First, a poet from the fields, Mr. What is your name again, sir?
Bliss Bullfinch.
Bliss Bullfinch?
And no cracks.
Have you read Mr. Guest's poem, Bliss?
Meat on the Table? Oh, yes. I gave a reading of Meat on the Table only last week. Ours is a land of steak and chops, of pork, beef, lamb, and veal.
I know, I'm quite familiar with it. Well, where did you give this reading?
In a refrigerator on 14th Street.
In a refrigerator?
Yes, it was a warm day outside. The meat in the poem might have spoiled.
I understand, Bliss. But tell me, Mr. Bullfinch, has Mr. Guest's meat poem inspired you?
No. For my inspiration, I have had to turn to the vegetable kingdom.
Oh, I see. The vegetable kingdom.
Yes. Have you heard my latest vegetable sonnet? Is envy turning you green, little pea?
No, I regret to say that I haven't.
Perhaps you've heard my salad rondelay. Fickle lettuce, you have no heart.
No, I haven't. I heard perhaps, that either.
Perhaps my soliloquy while bending over a barrel. Sauerkraut, you mustn't pout.
Well, what truck garden gem are you reciting for us tonight, Bliss old boy?
Brussels sprout.
That is the title?
Yes.
Brussels sprout? We'll go right ahead.
A man's best friend is a Brussels sprout. Its praises from hill and housetop I shout. From millionaire down to the little boy scout. A man's best friend is a Brussels sprout.
Very good.
A Brussels sprout is man's best friend. If you've hurt a sprout, go make amend. Don't abuse a sprout in jest or fun. For every Brussels sprout is some cabbage's son.
Well done. Well done, and I wanted it medium rare. But thank you. Thank you, Bliss Bullfinch. Next, a poet who has a rendezvous with oblivion the minute he leaves us here tonight, Mr. Swinburne McGee. Are you a commercial poet, Swinburne?
Yeah, I'm freelancing.
And by freelancing, you mean?
I ain't eating regular.
But you have been writing poetry.
Oh, yeah. I've been hustling the muse when I get a chance.
The muse doesn't resent it? Well, now what about Mr. Guest's poem on meat?
Oh, I got a twist on it. I wrote a poem on fish.
Fish?
Yeah. It's a piscatorial pastoral.
It is? Can you spare it? What is it called?
All hail the sardine.
Sounds mighty intriguing. go right ahead, please.
All hail the sardine, most short-lived of fishes. No wonder he's selfish and lives as he wishes. When a sardine is born, he forecasts his lifespan, saying, last night I was a boy, but today I am a can.
No question about it, and thank you. It has been anything but a pleasure to have you here tonight. Our next tattered troubadour is Stark Devereaux III. What is your specialty, Stark?
For 20 years, I was known as the King of Cliché.
The King of Cliché, really?
Yes. Then for 2 years, I didn't write a line.
You were written out?
No, no, I lost my beret.
And you have been writing bareheaded ever since?
Oh, no. I put one hand on my head and write with the other.
Too bad you haven't a third hand. You could pick up that egg. But Have you read Mr. Guest's poem, Meat on the Table?
Oh, no. I poo-poo vitamin verse.
You do?
Yes. I concentrate on the inanimate. I glorify the group.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, a cow alone is a cow. Together, it's a herd.
Oh, I see.
A bird alone is a bird. Together, it's a flock.
Yes?
A thing alone is a thing. Together, it's a bundle.
Oh. And your masterpiece is dedicated to a bundle.
Yes.
And what is it called?
Pooh, to me it's string.
Will you recite it for us, please?
You can call it twine or whipcord, thread or ribbon, anything. If it can be knotted, tied up, pooh, to me it's string. You can put it on a fiddle, for pizzicato or for swing, call it A or call it E-flat, pooh, to me it's string. You can hide it in a necklace, say it makes your phone bell ring, call it hemp or jute or oakum, pooh and pooh, to me it's string.
Well, thank you very much.
String is string.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, I was so wrapped up.
String will do it. And now, last and no doubt least, a young poetess who always carries a suitcase because she knows she's going places, Miss Steffi Buxbaum.
I am appearing courtesy Mandel's Nut Shop.
Oh, you are to that Mandel's Nut Shop?
Yes. Tonight I should be working. Mr. Mandel is letting me off.
Oh, I see. I didn't...
But only on one condition.
You have to...
First I mention Mandel's Nut Shop. It's a must.
Well, have you been on the air before?
Air, he says. I am breathing it.
No, I mean, have you been on any radio programs before?
Every night I'm appearing. Always it's a quiz show. Double or leave it. Ask it, smash it. I'm a regular Vox mom.
A Vox mom?
Oh, that's a Vox pop, only a woman.
Oh, I never would have known. Thank you very much. Now, but you are a poetess, Miss Buxbaum.
What else? But by Steffi Buxbaum, their poems is only about something you couldn't see.
You mean hidden things around the nut shop?
Exactly. Like a bugle call to a pecan kernel.
Oh. You can't see those, can you?
Uh-huh.
And still you write about them.
That's right.
Yes.
Gesundheit to a cashew.
Oh, no. What poem would you like to recite for us tonight, Steffi?
To a seed inside a prune.
Well, you can't find anything more concealed than that.
Who is telling who?
Well, excuse me. Excuse me, go right ahead.
Thank you. To a seed inside a prune. Hello, little seed inside a prune. What's new in there? What is doing? Is it morning, night, or noon, little seed inside the prune? Little seed inside a prune, wrapped up in your black cocoon. Would you with the world commune, little seed inside a prune? Oh, lucky you, little seed in a prune, safe from the world and its misfortune. To you, I say, it would be a boon if man was a seed inside a prune.
Gentlemen, Kenny Baker sings for us because...
afternoon talking with a Texaco engineer, and I really got the lowdown.
Yes, but you can't explain.
Oh, look, Jimmy, I may not remember all the technical phrases the Texaco engineer used, but I certainly can convey the approximate idea.
All right, then what did the engineer say?
Well, he said that Fire Chief starts fast and picks up quick because it has equilibrium on the bias with a scallop rampant on the girth with reticulation absorbing inertia for emergency duty power.
Is that what he said?
Well, that's the way it sounded to me, Jimmy. As I got it, Fire Chief is so good because it's fiddly with the double warts and hemmed in on the bustle at approximately slurp. How am I doing, Jimmy?
Well, frankly, Fred, I think you're octane happy.
Well, it could be.
Yeah. But most of us would be if we heard a technical explanation of the reasons for Fire Chief's...
Through the rhyme. Very nice, Al, too. And now, ladies and
gentlemen... Oh, Mr. Allen?
Yes, Kenny?
Is this where I do my acting?
No, not now. A little later on.
Oh. To be or not to be? Is that a question?
Well, it always has been up to now. Of course, you might change the slant on it. And now, ladies and gentlemen, our guest tonight...
Hello, Mr. Allen.
Oh, hello. You're a little late, aren't you?
Yes, I ought to take Mama down to the auto show, and I just got back.
Say, how is the auto show this year?
Oh, the new models are wonderful. They've got big cars and those little Crosleys.
Yes, I know. A lot of radio comedians have big cars and little Crosleys, too. Present company accepted, I hope. Well, did you see any of those new models with the new fluid drive?
Yes. And I saw one car, instead of a speedometer, it has a television set.
You can tell how fast you're going by television?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. At 30 miles an hour, you see a motorcycle policeman. He's smiling.
Uh-huh. That's a new system waiting in between the sentences, isn't it? Yeah? Don't tell me you're so confused you're now waiting at punctuation marks. In case. You say with this new television idea at 30 miles an hour, you see a motorcycle policeman, but he's smiling.
Uh-huh.
Well, if you're doing 50...
You see your finance company man. He's pulling his hair out.
You see? Alone? And if you're... Suppose, let's say you're going 70.
You see your will being opened by a stranger.
At 70 miles an hour, your will is being opened by a stranger. We both could have waited there, you see. I have caught a cross-town bus with less waiting than... Well, that's a wonderful idea, even if it didn't pan out so well. Tell me, have all the new models got radios this year?
All except the ones that Major Bose advertises.
Well, what happens if you want entertainment in one of the Major's cars?
Well, you turn the knob... And a unit comes out.
And the mayor of the Honor City right behind us. Well, I guess that covers the... Quiet now. That should come from other sources. Well, I guess that covers the... Listen. we can do that, we can do away with the audience entirely. I tell them and you laugh at them. Well, I guess that covers the auto show. May come to that yet, too. What about our guest?
Have you ever heard of the League for Less Noise?
Oh, yes. I remember when the Anti-Noise League was started here in New York a few years back. I wonder what progress has been made.
There is only one man to ask.
You mean our guest?
Yes. Mr. Allen, meet the president of the League for Less Noise, Mr. Ernest Peabody.
Well, good evening, Mr. Peabody.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
You are the president and founder of the League for Less Noise.
Yes, I organized the league back in 1935.
Well, do you devote all of your time to anti-noise work?
No, I am president of the Peabody Engineering Corporation here in New York and chairman of the board of Peabody Limited in London.
And you receive a salary, too, as president of the league?
Oh, no. The league is a non-profit organization supported entirely by voluntary contributions.
Well, tell me, what prompted you to start this down with hubbub crusade, Mr. Peabody? You weren't frightened by a decibel as a boy, were you?
No, but I have been a resident of New York for many years. The street noises seemed to be getting worse.
And you decided to do something about it.
Yes, the league was formed, and after holding several meetings, we decided to try to enlist Mayor LaGuardia's support.
Well, how did you contact the mayor? Did you hail him as he passed by on a hook and ladder?
No, we went down to City Hall.
You took a chance, eh? Did the mayor approve of your anti-noise movement?
Yes, he gave us a fine send-off. And today we have his full cooperation and the support of the police department.
Yes, the mayor has done many wonderful things. You know, I've always claimed that keeping Mayor LaGuardia in the city hall is like making a loaf of bread. Having a little flour has saved us a lot of dough. Mr. Peabody, how does the league go about curbing noise? You know, Gesundheit. sneezing is all right. You have a right to come in here and have a little fun on your own hook. Mr. Peabody and I are interrupting the sneezing. We'll be glad to see you. Tell me, Mr. Peabody, how does the league go about curbing noise, you know, apart from distributing posters and literature?
We receive thousands of complaints about noise, which we ask the Safety Bureau to investigate, and they're doing a fine job.
Well, don't tell me that a person here in New York City can get 30 days for committing a blowout in his bubble gum, or that the police can force a man wearing a loud necktie to put on a muffler.
The league isn't unreasonable, Mr. Allen.
No.
We're merely trying to curtail the most unnecessary and annoying noises.
Well, what sound, in your opinion, Mr. Peabody, is public nuisance number one?
The automobile horn.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the kind guaranteed to be heard 15 miles away.
Well, auto horns seem to be getting more versatile. They even play melodies these days. I read about a new musical automobile horn that's coming out. Before you can even blow it, you have to take 6 lessons at Madame La Wurlitzer.
That kind of music is ghastly.
Well, the music, yes, but the horns in themselves are harmless.
Yes, but the chronic horn blower is a nuisance. Also, a danger in city traffic. That's why the Safety Bureau is handling the anti-noise campaign.
Well, tell me, what steps have you taken to curb horn blowing?
Well, for one thing, during the first 6 months of this year, over 40,000 warnings and 3,000 summonses were given out for unnecessary honking.
In other words, you hope to eliminate the toot, the whole toot, and nothing but the toot.
Exactly. Statistics prove that if unnecessary horn blowing is stopped, we'll have a safer driving and fewer accidents.
Well, after automobile horns, what is the next ranking audible annoyance on your noise parade?
radios.
Mr. Peabody, you're on mighty dangerous ground there, sir.
Oh, I don't mean anything personal, Mr. Allen.
No?
Our problem is the person who plays his radio too loud and too late.
Yes, they are pests. And there are other neighborhood blights, too, aren't there?
Yes. We try to cope with loud-voiced peddlers, street musicians, and the owners of noisy animals. We have practically removed sound trucks from the streets and loudspeakers from store windows.
Very good.
We've helped to have the building laws amended so that instead of riveting, a less noisy process is used.
Well, you're certainly doing a wonderful work. I know the League has made New Yorkers more noise conscious, and eventually that it is going to make our town a more pleasant and safer place in which to live.
I'm sure it will, Mr. Allen.
Now, before you go tonight, I think I should make a little contribution to further the interests of your work.
All contributions gratefully received.
Fine. Well, there are probably several million radios tuned in on us at this very moment, and as a gesture of goodwill and as a salute to the League for Less Noise, Mr. Peabody, I am donating 10 seconds of absolute silence on the entire network. Now, here we go. There you are, Mr. Peabody. How is that?
Mr. Allen, those were the pleasantest 10 seconds I ever spent in New York.
Thank you a lot.
And don't forget, Noise Abatement Week throughout the country starts October 21st.
I'll make a note of it. Thank you, and good night, Mr. Ernest Peabody. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Broadway hit Louisiana Purchase, come the Martins, our favorite quartet, to sing for you When You Climb Those Golden Stairs. Have written in to me, General Delivery, my home address, asking if they're going to have a chance to use their ski suits this winter. And so tonight, for advance information on the weather for the coming months, we bring you the Dean of Amateur Weather Prophets, Mr. Seymour Drip. Now, tell us, Mr. Drip, on what do you base your forecast for the coming winter?
My meteorological prognostications are based upon a survey of squirrels' nests.
Really? Squirrels' nests?
Yes.
Mighty interesting.
Yes, I have just completed a tabulation of 543 squirrels' domiciles in trees in Central Park. The results have been averaged, and a norm has been struck.
I see. Norm, didn't suffer any consequences, I hope. You took a poll, you say, but you did it in trees. Now, what were the results of your survey?
The typical squirrel's nest was found to contain the following items. A, one soggy Dixie cup.
Yes.
B, two subway transfers.
Yes.
And C, a squirrel.
And you have made a weather forecast from this statistical mulligan, these figures?
Yes, I have. After careful analysis, I am prepared to announce the exact length of the coming winter. Winter will last...
Yes?
From the end of autumn to the beginning of spring.
Thank you very much. You've marked up everything very nicely. Well, I see if I want to know anything about the coming winter, I had better consult the official weatherman. What does the weatherman say, Jimmy?
Well, in most of our round table, where three persons selected from our studio audience are invited to give their opinions on a question that concerns some prominent issue of the day. This little session is entirely unrehearsed. Fred takes his place at the round table where he meets his fellow debaters for the first time. Are you ready,
Fred? I didn't think you were going to make it, Jimmy. You're waking there. Yes, I am ready and awake, Jimmy. Portland, would you kindly introduce the first member of our board, please?
Yes, Mr. Lionel Toll, New York City.
Good evening, Mr. Toll.
Good evening.
May I... I didn't wake you up.
But... No, you didn't, sir.
But may I ask your profession, Mr. Toll?
I'm a motion picture trade paper editor and publicity director.
What trade paper? Do you mind saying?
The Independent.
The Independent? We mean that's a paper that is sponsored by the independent theater owners in America?
That's right.
How many independent theater owners are there, motion picture theater owners in the country?
About 12,000.
Really? 12,000, huh? Do you think I made a picture at Paramount this summer with a famous character actor out there?
A nephew of Boris Karloff's, you might Now, do you think the independent theater owners will be able to handle this attraction when it comes out in December?
If they get the picture on a percentage basis.
If they get it on a percentage.
Yeah. Most of the percentage should be Alan.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you, Mr. Toll. I thought you meant that Benny and I would also have to service the theater, sweep out while the picture... Thanks a lot, Mr. Toll. I'm drooling here. I'm getting distance. I hope you don't mind. And now, Portland.
Miss Marion Miner from Mystic, Connecticut.
Good evening, Miss Miner.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
May I ask your profession or calling?
I'm a child's nurse.
A child's nurse?
That's right.
Do you feel at home here tonight?
Not exactly.
No, you should. I'm in my second childhood.
Well, I didn't know that.
I'd like to continue this discussion a little farther, but unfortunately, I shan't be able to. I hope you don't mind.
Perfectly all right.
Thank you. So nice of you. Now, Portland.
Mr. Harry Klein from New York City.
Good evening, Mr. Klein.
Good evening, Mr. Lowell.
May I ask your calling, profession, racket, or industry?
Short order cook.
You're a short order cook, are you?
Yes.
Tell me, Mr. Klein. Don't. Jim's doing ventriloquism. Mr. Klein can speak for himself. Jim's around there doing the burger. Let Mr. Klein alone. Well, that brings us to our question, Mr. Klein. And tonight, in spite of Uncle Jim, and tonight we take up a question that concerns radio. Ever since the radio set has replaced the magic lantern in most homes, except in Beverly Hills, studio audiences have been a subject for debate. Many listeners claim that the riotous laughter and applause of studio audiences spoil the program for them at home. Other listeners say that the studio audiences liven up the programs and that hearing others having a good time increases their enjoyment of the programs at home. Now, our question tonight is, do you think that studio audiences are an asset or a liability to radio programs? Now, Mr. Toll, how do you feel about studio audiences?
I really don't feel very greatly about them or not.
You don't? You don't?
Personally, I like to listen to the radio at home.
You'd rather listen to the radio at home than in the studio.
Yeah, because I can turn the program off at home.
Of course, that's an advantage we have in the studio. Once you get in here, we lock the doors. I mean, you can't do that. We're working on a thing now. If you tune us in, it automatically bolts your door. We're going to get the people at home, too. Well, you rather hear a program at home. The effect is
greater.
There's some illusion, and you enjoy it more.
Is that right? Very true.
Thank you, sir. Miss Miner, how do you feel about studio audiences?
I also rather hear a program at home.
You would? Why? It puts the baby to sleep or something?
Well, it helps, but some of the studio programs, well, they're different than they are when you hear them at home.
You mean there's no illusion when you come to the studio?
Well?
I mean, you see me with these bags under my eyes. Now, after all, at least you hear my voice on the air. There aren't any bags in my voice. Or are there?
No, there aren't.
But you would rather hear programs without the studio reaction.
That's right.
Yeah, you don't think it's fair if you hear a shriek or a laugh in the studio and don't understand what it is at home. You feel cheated, do you?
Yes, a bit.
A bit.
I still rather hear them at home.
You still rather hear them at home. Would you rather have heard this program at home tonight?
No.
Well, all right, Mr. Klein, how do you feel about it? Do you have a radio in the lunchroom?
Yes, we do.
You're a short order cook, but I'm a long order talker. I hope you don't mind. You do. How do you feel about studio audiences, Mr. Klein?
No, I would rather be in a studio and listen to it.
You would rather be in the studio than hear it on the air?
Yeah.
Why don't you sell your radio? Just do away with the middleman and get down here every night. Something's always going on. You'd rather hear it in the studio.
That's right.
Well, what do you do with the radio in the place? Keep it turned off?
You know, we keep that for the customers.
Oh, for the customers. Not to take their mind off the cuisine by any chance. Well, I suppose when you serve one poached egg, you turn on the Lone Ranger. It's sort of... Well, you keep the... I'm sorry I brought... brought the whole thing up. Personally, I feel that all radio programs should be presented for the folks at home. The studio audience, I think, should attend broadcast as sightseers rather than to see rather to see how the program is executed than to expect a show put on for their special benefit. Before this audience here tonight can get at me, I am leaving through a crack in the air conditioning. The meeting is adjourned, and thank you all for your staying up so long. Say, Kenny.
Yes,
Kenny, you're there, are you?
Yeah.
I've heard of a delayed take, but not a delayed line before. That's a new... Well, all these new things cropping
is
up.
Is this where I do my acting?
Well, no, Kenny. This is where you sing again. I have it on my cuff here. What would you suggest?
I'll never smile again.
Give us more music.
Quiet, quiet, please.
No comedy, more music.
You down in the front row, quiet, please.
Who, me?
Yes, you. I have been watching you ever since this program started. I have never seen anybody get more unenjoyment out of comedy. To put it bluntly, Bud, I have seen happier looking pans than yours under ice boxes.
Well, it ain't my fault. I don't feel so good.
What's the matter? Something you ate? Are you allergic to comedians? Has your wife been beating you?
Nah. I've just been sitting there thinking. I drove 25 miles to get here tonight. Trolling me old clunk along the highway, getting hung up in traffic. Looking all over town for a place to park.
Uh-huh.
As soon as the program's over, I gotta go back to where I parked, get hung up in traffic some more, and I tow me old trunk back home. Oh, it's a hibiscus circle.
Yeah. You took the words out of my mouth, and I didn't want them in there. Thank you very much. Well, if it's... let me tell you, friend, if it's driving that's put you in this mood, you've certainly come to the right place. Through a strange coincidence, our Mr. Elliot is about to give our listeners a message that can change your entire mental attitude. Would you mind giving it, Larry?
What sort of mood were you in the last time you drove your car? Was it one of those matter-of-fact, not-much-fun-in-it feelings? If so...
Spot announcement opening at the station next Friday. That was very nice. And now tonight, the Texaco workshop player...
Is this where I do my acting, Mr. Allen?
Yes, Kenny. Here's your part.
Oh, gee. Do I play the lead?
Well, I wouldn't say it's the...
I get it. I'm a stooge.
You know what Shakespeare said, Kenny.
All the world's a stooge?
Now, wait a minute. You have done enough to Bill tonight. Now, you go over in the corner and study your lines.
Yes, sir.
Just registered. The military thing is in his voice already. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, lay quiet. Quiet, you. The guy from WOR running his own broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, the Texaco Workshop Players present a blood-curdling mystery. It's called Death Takes a Boniface, or One Long Pan Was Disguised as a Girdle, so they knew he was closing in. Curtain, Alfredo.
Thank you, and hello, everyone. This is your man about town, broadcasting the outstanding nightlife event of the season. I'm speaking from the Bamboo Room of the Typhoon, the new tropical night spot that's opening tonight to join the beachcombers and the hurricane, a society rendezvous. Or rendezvous, is rather. It's plural. And here's the owner of the Typhoon, Sherman Swank himself. Say a few words, Sherman.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Drop into the Typhoon and try my new tropical cocktail, the Zambi. The Zambi is made from a secret jungle formula. And I am the only one who knows...
No. Now nobody knows.
Sherman, are you hurt?
Oh, I'm dying. Get my creditors for pallbearers. It's the last chance they'll have to carry me.
This is terrible, folks. Sherman Swank, owner of the Typhoon, has just been murdered. They're locking the doors. No suspects can get away. This is a mystery that will baffle the police. Who will take the case? Will it be J. Edgar Hoover? Will it be Sherlock Holmes? Will it be One Long Pan?
Hello? Yeah, this is the FBI. What? Somebody just shot a nightclub owner? You got the wrong FBI, mister. This is the Fuller Brush Institute.
Are you there? Yes, this is Sherlock Holmes. What? Sorry, old boy. I can't take the case. No, I'm just sitting down to dinner. I'm about to have my soup. Quick, Watson, the noodle.
Hello, Detective One Long Pan's confidential secretary speaking. Yeah, Long Pan will take the case. I'll call him. He's over in the automat seeing if the slots are white with campaign buttons. Long Pan will be right over.
Come in, come in.
Gleeting. Thought I'd never get here. Gleeting. Some radio car. Some man hold radio car up. Gleeting and was smokes to kid, eh? Detective One Long Pan reporting. I'll never smile again. I lost my upper plate.
Hey, what is this? Who are you, you Mongolian hepcap?
I am Detective One Long Pan.
Oh, well, you're just in time. Sherman Swank, the owner of this nightclub, has just been murdered.
Murder? Who are you, Mr. Big Shop?
I am Monty Cuff, Sherman's partner.
Very good. Where's Body? Body and murder case, very important.
I had Sherman brought in the office here.
Then we are not alone?
No, the body's there in the corner, under that tablecloth.
Aesop say nightclub owner who die on the tablecloth still have cover. Long Pan, pick up cloth. Oh, pick up. Oh, I see you.
Poor Sherman. Look at him. Shot right through the sneer.
Cool bullet hole. Very baffling. Long Pan zip into action. Long Pan examine suspect. Where are suspect?
I got everybody locked in the club. Nobody can leave here until you say so.
Very good. Long Pan.
I say, which one of you is a detective?
I am Detective One Long Pan, buddy. Oriental Arsenic Lupin. What do you want, kiddo?
I've got to go. I'll miss my bus for West Orange, New Jersey.
Why, your bus left. I just hear bus. Why you catch him high, Mr. High Talk?
I have to beat the curfew. If I'm not in bed by 10 o'clock, the mayor will take away my Dick Tracy badge.
What you doing nightclub, Rover boy? What you doing nightclub, you bad boy? I saw One Long Pan.
I just came in to get a ginger ale. I heard two shots.
Excuse me, which candidate are you going to vote for?
Who are you, brother?
I'm Dr. Callop. I'm taking a presidential straw vote. Your choice, please.
Oh, well, count me one vote for, what's his name, the Republican?
Oh, the Republican, yes.
One vote for the other guy, the Democrat.
Yes, the Democrat, yes.
One vote for Confucius.
Confucius is not running?
Long Pan light Confucius in. Confucius run on laundry, take a favorite song.
I see, and who are you voting for? You in the corner.
That's a dead body.
Oh, I see. Well, that's one vote for McKinley. Well, goodbye.
Doctor, have soft job. Aesop say man make good living count straw. It ain't hay.
Excuse me.
Just a minute, buddy. Who are you?
I'm the fella has to catch the bus, remember?
You stay here, Mr. Commuter, not go home, East Grapefruit.
It's West Orange.
I don't care, South Cantaloupe. Nobody leave this a nightclub.
Oh, shoot. If you want me, I'll be inside spinning my yo-yo.
Oh, look, Long Pan, we're not getting any place. Sherman is dead. Who murdered him?
Long Pan soon find out. Jig time.
Hey, where's that Mongolian flat for?
Oh, who are you, Misha Hot Patootie?
I'm Muriel Latoot.
She's the hat check girl, Long Pan.
Yeah, and I know who committed the murder.
Ah, well, you come clean, the short, the dark, and soft egg. Who bump off your boss, Sherman Swank?
It was Louis the Twitch.
Louis the Twitch?
Yeah, that roughneck that owns the club sarong next door.
Say, Louis might have done it at that. I saw him coming in.
Why, you suspect Louis the Itch, missy?
I'll tell you why. Because he didn't check his gun.
Are you sure, Muriel?
I seen it sticking out of his hip pocket. He was toting formal. Black Gat with white holster.
Riding holster, important clue. You call Louis in, the Mission Monte Carlo. Flanto.
Okay. Hey, boys. Page Louis the Twitch. Send him in here.
Okay. Call for Louis the Twitch. Come.
Very good. Case solved in no time. You can't brush me off, because I always got more dandruff. You can try, but you can't brush me off. Request the number. A whole long time. Woogie cat.
Oh, this must be Louis.
Come in.
You sent for me, Cuff.
No, I sent for you, Miss Aloy the Witch. Long panelist, you for murder.
I didn't bump off, Sherman. Somebody stole me gun and beat me to it.
You mean you were going to shoot my partner because we opened another tropical nightclub next to yours?
I didn't mind you bum starting your typhoon next to my sarong.
Typhoon next to sarong for a draft day.
But why did you want to kill Sherman?
It was that no-drinker swankster, Zambi. That's a dead steal from the drink my club is featuring, the Zimbi.
Well, but your Zimbi is just a steal from the zombie.
I know, but it was my original idea to steal the zombie. He stole my steal, that stool.
Long plan find out who steals stool later. First, mystery, who killed Sherman Swank?
Hey, you fellas, I'm going to miss my bus.
Quiet, please, quiet.
I only came here for a ginger ale.
You sit down. You keep quiet.
Hey, wait a minute, Long Sam. I seem to recognize this punk.
Yeah.
Wasn't you sitting next to me at my table, bud?
I can't answer, sir. My mother told me not to talk to strangers.
Certainly, you're the jerk. I busted out laughing when you ordered a ginger ale.
Ginger ale. Jigsaw complete. You steal gun from tough guy, Louis. You shoot Mr. Sherman Swank.
That Mr. One Long Pan is a dirty fib.
Oh, yeah? Maybe you can explain the bulge in back pocket.
That's my yo-yo, Smarty Pants.
Long Pan, investigate yo-yo. Come here.
Well, good night, all.
Bye, Louis.
Get over here.
You see, not yo-yo in pocket. Lee Wallowa.
Lee Wallowa?
Yeah, that's my gap, too. You see, there's me crest on the hand.
Also, two bullets missing. You fess up, Mr. High Boys.
Okay. You got me, Long Pan. I killed Sherman Swank.
Why, Daddy?
It was that darn drink, the Zambi.
Zambi?
Yes. I came in to get a ginger ale, and what did they bring me? A Zambi. It was the last straw.
But why?
You see, I love ginger ale. And with all those crazy drinks all over town, I can't get a ginger ale. Every time I order ginger ale, they bring me a zombie. A Zimbi. A Zumbi. A Zambi. I'll get ginger ale if I have to shoot every nightclub owner in town. I'll kill myself.
No, stop straining voice, Kenny Baker. Or next week you'll sing bass.
I don't care. Tell me, Long Pan. Will I hang for this killing?
No, Kenny. Can a singer get away with murder? Nobody ever hang you.
Why not?
Aesop say nobody ever want good tenor to swing. Long Pan, Kenny.
Jimmy has a word for us.
They call them dusters, the men who...